Hey everyone, welcome back to the Commercial Real Estate Library podcast. I'm Damit Tamnawala. I'm a senior sales representative at Colliers International. Today, as usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Garrett McGilvery. He's a senior originator at Trez Capital. On this podcast, we connect you with industry leaders in commercial real estate. We get you insights from people who drive decisions in the marketplace. This podcast is going to be a little bit different. We're doing it virtually. We're focusing on COVID-19's impacts on the industrial marketplace. And this is going to form part of a larger series where we go vertical by vertical discussing COVID-19's impacts on the broader market in commercial real estate. Today, we're very lucky to be joined by Gord Cook. He's an executive vice president at Colliers International. Over Gord's 30-year career at Colliers, he has consistently ranked as a top five producer nationally, and often he is the top producer for Colliers nationally. For instance, last year, he was once again named Canada's top producing industrial broker. He has assembled teams that focus on industrial leasing, industrial investment, infill development, and multifamily. He's a business partner of mine. He's very thoughtful in how he approaches the business, so you're going to get a lot from this. Before we dive in, I want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, KMB Law. KMB Law are corporate real estate lawyers that specialize in the acquisition, disposition, and financing of commercial real estate. You can visit them at kmblaw.com. I also want to say thank you to our sponsor, Mizrahi Developments. Mizrahi Developments was founded with the goal of changing expectations in the development industry for the better. They are constantly doing this on their projects. For instance, they are currently building what will be the tallest condo tower in Canada at the corner of Yonge and Bloor. You can visit them and learn more about that at MizrahiDevelopments.com. If you like this content, please support the show by supporting our sponsors. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the episode. Okay, so Gord, just to start it off, you have investment experience and leasing experience in many different facets of the industry, but I want to focus on industrial today. So with the effect of this COVID-19 virus, what are you industrial market and what are the largest impacts that you're seeing?
Well, Damon, this is a very interesting phenomena that we're in right now, and people are very focused on the now period, like where people are social distancing, businesses are working from home, industrial companies are dealing with labor issues to make sure their staff are safe. They're putting in additional protocol for those safety reasons. And then they're also dealing with customer demands, depending on how those customers are being impacted by COVID locally or globally in their supply chain. So I think it's safe to say that the industrial market is kind of being very reactionary right now, where it's customer focused, it's employee focused, and depending on what you do, you're going to be managed things differently. A company that supplies the restaurant sector with equipment and knives and forks and cups and saucers, you know, they're obviously concerned because their phone lines are probably gone dead. So they're kind of in a survival mode. They're probably in response to their lender or their landlord looking for some kind of relief, depending on what their capital structure is like. But I think the bigger issue around the industrial question is that it's less vulnerable right this second because the industrial market is fairly diversified between manufacturers, warehouse and distribution organizations, and then the service industrial. So it's a very broad bandwidth. And I think other than dealing with those kind of issues around employees and customers, it is just working through this cycle, right? But I think the business leadership on the industrial side is not so focused on every hour of their day on the current situation, but they're probably looking forward on how their business is going to respond coming out of this. You know, and Colliers is doing this as a service company in the commercial real estate business, you know, and I think that's what we have to start thinking about as well, is not just the reactionary needs today, but how the industrial markets are going to respond to the bigger issue. And that is really going to be an economy that is going to be hurt. It's going to be flattened. And then there is going to have to be this cycle coming back out of the economic period. You know, markets like Toronto and Southern California and New Jersey and Chicago, these markets tend to have a very, very high percentage of inventory that are what we call consumption buildings, right? The industrial market is really driven on consumption. And that is such a wide definition, but consumption is really what DEMA is going out and acquiring that day. Is it the Starbucks coffee that has a warehouse filled with cups being produced by a manufacturer somewhere in North America, but they're being stored here locally? Is it the lids on those cups? Is it the coffee beans themselves and where they're being roasted before they hit the store? And then those bakeries that supply those commissary goods. So the consumption word is everything from the TV to the cup of coffee and everything between. And unfortunately, Toronto, like many other big consumption markets, our industrial markets really drive on that consumption. And if consumption is going to soften, and let's face it, it is going to soften, people are going to have less jobs and or less income, we can anticipate that our recovery as a city and a province, knowing that we're this big, huge engine around consumption and spending, the industrial market's going to be impacted. So what does that mean? It means that we're going to see a softening in rent, and we'll likely even see rents become discounted. How far they'll discount will really be the motivation of that particular landlord. Would they rather see the space stabilized, or would they rather wait out this cycle and hold firm on rents? As you know, being in the investment side of apartments, that's really going to be an internal decision, and it's likely driven off of their long-term ownership plans. If someone has a low cost base and owns several buildings, they may rather just backfill the space and get it occupied and not care that they lost a buck a foot in top line rent, because at the end of the day, they don't have a mandate to sell or refinance immediately. It's around stabilizing and pushing the portfolio out further in time before maybe they see that immediate rental growth. You know, we're going to see sublets. We're going to see product come on stream that maybe not have been leased as quickly as we thought. So that's the issue that I think landlords are going to be thinking about. And tenants, as we know, are going to start purging space because they had higher growth projections, or they've just lost businesses.
Did you see? Sorry, Gord, to cut in. Did you see? You're making our jobs really easy here, because you're answering a lot of the questions that we have as you go on. But you know, we just had April 1st. What is it? It's the second today, so.
It's the third
today, right? So you know, I know apartment owners were dealing with this in a specific way, a lot of delinquencies, I'm sure, on the retail side. Did industrial see the same thing, or are they concerned about, you know, are landlords getting rent relief requests? Are they being hit in that same fashion from their tenants?
No question. So I participate in a broader group amongst Colliers globally called the Logistics and Transportation Group. And we had a team conference call early this week or late last week. All the days start to seem the same now. But in that call, we had a discussion around rent deferral and rent abatement. You know, you have some large global companies that I can't name, that CEOs wrote letters to their landlords and said, hey, you know, we need your help now. And we're proposing anywhere from abatement to deferral, depending on the current situation. A lot of landlords looked at these situations whereby, the tenant was almost being proactive and reactionary because, you know, really how much had their business changed on their ability to pay rent for April 1st, or were they already predicting these, you know, loss of revenues and therefore earning numbers getting hurt out into May, June, July? So being very proactive because of this gut reaction, it makes sense for a business leader to look at it. The general theme from the landlord side on the industrial assets is no, you know, your lease does not provide that type of relief. Force majeure does not cover this type of situation. So the immediate response is, hey, let's work together as partners, landlord and tenant. Let's revisit and keep the communication lines open, but no, I want April 1st rent. Now, keep in mind, Dama, that is a broad response. I am sure each and every day, landlords and tenants are talking quite regularly and are likely making some concessions if they see fit. And I think what's important is it should not be broad brushed. It is very specific to a tenant and landlord relationship, because as you know, there's lots of dynamics there, where they are in their lease, what their current net rent is, how they performed historically, because the last thing you want to do is start getting into a situation of a rent deferral when you've had a poor credit history with a tenant for the last 3 years. They're likely not going to make it anyways. So all of these things are going to come into play. So I think it's important for us is, you know, be there as the advisor, gain this information from these broader community conversations like myself with L&T and working with some large landlords here in Toronto. But I think the immediate response is we're here to help, but April rent is due and payable.
Right. I wonder if any landlords are going to take the tactic of, you know, here, we'll lend a helping hand for now, but in 6 months' time, your rent is doubling. That's it's a new deal. You know?
Well, it is interesting. I was talking to a landlord this morning who had a tenant not send an email, no phone call, was just in arrears. And this was a landlord who just bought this property a year ago and inherited a very terrible lease, you know, around structure and other responsibilities of a landlord. And you know, this landlord was almost contemplating sending termination notice, not because he was a couple of days late on rent, but at least, you know, set the stage that, hey, it's a whole new day. You didn't pay rent. Your lease is terminated. Oh, FYI, now let's talk about how I can help you. Oh, and FYI, you're going to help me. And that was, you know, you're going to go into my form of lease. We can talk about a rent deferral and bring the conversation to a much broader level. And I think that's back to my comment that it's very much on a case-by-case basis, depending on that landlord-tenant relationship and history.
Right. Are you seeing any, in a moment, I'd love to switch gears and just go right into brokerage, because you've been through many of these recessions, not exactly like this, but, you know, downturns in the economy before. So I'd love to touch on that. But you know, just one last question from a landlord's perspective or a tenant's perspective, where do you see the biggest opportunities coming out of this? Are there groups that are still, you know, hyper bullish on land right now? And, you know, are there certain types of industrial manufacturing, maybe where there's more opportunities to, you know, get a deal going? I'm just trying to search for the silver lining here for landlords and tenants.
Well, you know, as we all know, the retail sector has been probably hurt the hardest. But, you know, if we back up and look at what's actually happening in the retail sector, it's very complicated from a supply chain perspective. So you could just imagine all of these retailers who were bringing their spring clothing line in or they were bringing in their barbecues and outdoor furniture. Think everything around retail typically has seasonality, right? And the decisions on those purchase orders and delivery timelines are well before the actual sales cycle. So, Dama, what's happening with a lot of large retailers is that they've already purchased their spring merchandise. It's on a ship getting delivered to the North American shores. Because of this situation where sales already started to fall back in February and March, warehouses in the retail world are still filled with product.
Right.
The stores are not even changing over as quickly as they normally did because now stores are closed. So you actually have this effect where a lot of retailers are going to have this inventory built where they can't get it to the store. And even if they could, they're likely not going to sell as much because the consumer's not buying as much online because everyone's concerned about their financial well-being and how much money they've lost or the lack of money they'll make. So the retail world is quite complex because everyone's saying, oh my God, there's going to be this shed of space. Well, there's actually going to be this huge requirement for inventory storage for up to a year. Because if you can imagine, if you're a large public retailer and you've bought yourself a couple hundred million dollars worth of spring merchandise and you can't sell it, you're not going to put that on the shelf at Christmas and try to sell it at 70 cents, you know, 30 cents on the dollar. You're going to actually go out and rent warehouse space and store it to the next spring and cross your fingers it's still in fashion if it happens to be apparel goods. So that's what's going to happen is that we're actually going to find retailers requiring short-term space because of this inventory buildup that's not going to be sold. Right? Because not everything is just going to go on fire sale. You know, a smart retailer would take that into storage and wait this out and bring it on to the next selling cycle, which would be the following spring. Right. So, you know, so what does that mean? It means that we're obviously in a situation where that will help landlords who now could band-aid and do, you know, 6, 12, 18 month deals, help ride out this softer period of time. You know, is that enough demand to help fill the cracks when you maybe add the requirements around healthcare and grocery and food? I don't know.
Right.
It's a very diverse, you know, every industrial building tends to have something slightly different going on, but the trend is consumables that people acquire.
Right. And Garrett, just before we switch gears here, I want to bring you in because it's even harder to know when you want to cut in on this video conference. Did you have any questions for Gord there before we switch gears?
Just one quick thing. I've been hearing this a lot in the news and some people have been talking about this. What are your thoughts on, do you think when we come out of this in sort of like the mid to long term, do you think there'll be any more like a return to sort of nationalization of manufacturing and sort of bringing manufacturing out of China and out of countries that might, you know, cause delays because of, you know, potentially even future pandemics or something along those lines. And even with the softening of the industrial space, you know, cutting costs even here, will certain companies leverage that and bring manufacturing back home?
Great question. And listen, this is something that we know that the United States has been doing ever since Trump took office. A lot of it was around, you know, repatriating and bringing things back home. You know, the issue that we have at hand now with this pandemic reinforces, you know, I think Trump had a different agenda and a lot of those agendas were positive because it helped United States economy. It helped Americans get jobs back at home. But in the United States or in Canada, I think what is being talked about on the supply chain side is that what we'll call security and redundance in the supply chain. So what does that mean? It means that organizations are going to want to have more control locally of their inventory, you know, so getting things closer to the consumer. And that will be a positive outcome for Canada and the United States, because there will be this attention that they want to make sure that the supply chain is less vulnerable in your local market, right? So great question. And those will be some of the longer term benefits for industrial. Quite honestly, there's a lot of long-term benefits for industrial, because, you know, you think about what's happening on the e-commerce side, it's generally the only way consumers right now are spending money. And like everything, e-commerce is a bit of a habit change. It's how mom or dad used to buy their food or order their fertilizer for their lawn or whatever the product is. There's a lot of habits that are being changed right now. Look at us right now using Microsoft Teams. I never even knew it existed until now. So everything that we used to do is changing. And I think with change, there's going to be some things that will become more permanent in our lives. E-commerce, the numbers are staggering on how it's been growing against brick and mortar. And let's assume coming out of this, e-commerce will even be a bigger part of our lives.
Like your video turned off. I don't know if that happened on your end or on ours, but we'll just keep going.
I can tell you why, Damien, because it's John Powell calling me, and as you know, he calls me every 12 minutes. So yes. Hopefully we'll wrap this up before he calls again.
Okay. I'll be quick then. I really just wanted to ask, you know, you have had a lot of experience in brokerage, right? A 30-year plus career. And, you know, for a large portion of that time, you've been one of the top brokers, if not the top broker in Canada for Colliers, and weathered many of these recessions over the years. How do you have any advice for brokers who have seen their business, you know, decline? Like, what is the best way to position yourself to get out of this? And, you know, on the leasing and the investment side, as kind of investor expectations reset throughout these next few months?
Well, listen, it is a time where the smart advisor is going to come out ahead. And what's the definition of a smart advisor? Well, you know, our transaction volume is going to reduce, no question, which will likely be tied to our revenue. But what doesn't need to reduce is your market share, your market identity, and your market brand, and how you're going to approach your business going forward in a bit of a surgical way with a strong strategy behind it. So I think when I look back, some of the things that you can really do is make sure you're informed from both a micro and macroeconomic perspective. So you know how you can help those occupiers, and you know those occupiers that are going to be needing help restructuring, which real estate will be part of that restructuring through lease amendments or raising capital through sale leasebacks, or repositioning themselves from a geography point of view. So change in this regard is going to create a lot of conversations with the occupier, but your talk track is going to have to be very distinctively different depending on your audience. So do your homework and come across sophisticated in your ideas and how you're going to help someone. On the investment side, listen, we all know there's different investment profiles, from IRR-driven fee to stabilized long-term cash flow. You know, the aggregator versus the value add. Well, you know, there's going to be some churn in the investment side, because let's just assume that all of those IRR targets are going to start to diminish, because likely the deal horizon from acquisition to exit are all going to be protracted, and likely some of their metrics are not going to be met. So, you know, I think that, again, understanding your audience on helping them understand asset allocation or how their IRR targets are no longer going to be met, and how you could potentially help them exit through different strategies. So there will be investment volume, there will be occupier volume, but the people that do it are the ones that hold the relationship and are providing a value add. One last point I'd make, Dama, on the brokerage side is, you know, we look at these situations and, you know, fear comes into play. You know, I need to get a deal done. And what typically happens is we become less focused. We work on anything that comes into the door because we have this mentality that we gotta jump, we gotta just get something done. But what happens with that distraction is, you know, you're not focusing on your identity and brand, and you're not becoming better at what your core competency is. So if there's one thing I can learn, and I know there's different graduations of where people are in their career and how important just getting a deal done is important. So I know that'll be a balance for everybody, but this is an opportunity to grow exponentially at what you're really good at if you stay focused on it. And I think that's my take on this particular recession is, and yes, we are going into a recession out of this, is let's stay focused. Let's build our identity and brand and our market share, and let's not get distracted on just running after non-core business, right? So I think that's an advice that I'd make. And I know everyone will have to have a certain hybrid to that because people have car payments and mortgage payments and everything else. But I know for myself and my partners is, hey, we got to come out of this stronger from an identity and brand to grow more market share.
Absolutely. Okay. Gord, thank you. That's fantastic advice. And I'm sure people will find it useful. I definitely will. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Gordon.
Help out. Thank you both. Take care, guys. Have a good weekend.